Jared the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live today, Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Canadiens. Floyd, I went to morning skate today. I had to ask the questions. I'm worried about the team, so I had to ask the questions. And I'll be honest, Coach was very candid, and I appreciate that. And I think that you get a sense from the team that they're, you know, they kind of know how things are going, and they, you know, they don't like it. So I have to give them credit for that. We'll get to the Preds in a little bit. I think tonight is a pretty big game, so we will get to that. But, hey, let's start off talking about football today, Floyd Reese.
Okay. What do you got in mind?
Okay. So I got a couple of things. Number one, I want to start with this. Jay Glazer of The Athletic, also Fox Sports Insider, Jay Glazer was asked about the trade market in his mailbag on The Athletic. And he said, I think the league goes by trends, and there have been some big trades over the last year and a half or 2 years, and I think those will continue. What we saw with Khalil Mack, the success of the Amari Cooper trade, some of the moves the Eagles made during their Super Bowl run, I think you'll continue to see trades like that, and there will especially be trade talks for guys like Antonio Brown, a trade for Odell Beckham Jr., and of course there's more with the Le'Veon Bell saga. Yada, yada, yada. People make trades. People call all the time, that kind of thing. Then someone says, Jay, give us some bold predictions about the NFL offseason. Give us a free agent signing or another bold prediction. And Jay Glazer says, quote, I predict Odell Beckham Jr. gets traded this offseason. So Jay Glazer, that's his prediction. And it could be right or wrong. Who knows? But should the Titans be in the mix on a big name like that? I know no to Antonio Brown. I know. But the big names, you keep telling me no on the big names. You told me no to Khalil Mack.
Let me ask you a question. If you have one of the best two or three players in the league at a position, why would you ever trade him?
Well, Oakland traded Mack.
Why would you trade him? Either you're really stupid or there's something wrong with them. Because you just don't trade really, really good players. Unless there are issues.
I agree.
Well, I think there's the answer.
I believe Odell is a total loser.
And
so,
and if you can find a place that would want to put up with him, that would be willing to, that would all be willing to, you know, kowtow to whatever it is he wants, then great. And there's probably places out there like that. But they don't win. they're places where they lose. So,
although to Jay's point, some of the guys that have been getting traded, you know, Amari Cooper, it wasn't like he was a bad guy. And Amari Cooper gets traded to Dallas and he lights it up. And you told me no on Amari Cooper.
And what did I say to begin with? Either you're really stupid.
Or there's a problem. And on to that spot, wouldn't you argue there's a chance the Giants are really stupid? The Giants have just done a bunch of stupid stuff. So I'm using Odell kind of as the example to start on the trade talks. Like, I don't really want Odell on the Titans. I think he's a loser. I think he's like Antonio Brown. I think Odell is a stat guy. Odell is a one-handed catch guy. He's a, you know, look at the SportsCenter top 10. There's three catches by Odell. Great. How did his team do? Oh, they lost by three. Great. Like, I think Odell, and I think he's got a loser mentality, and I don't think that even if Vrabel or Mariota try to keep him in check, I don't think he ever would. I just think he's a loser. So, I agree. And, in fact, maybe they swap him for Brown because both teams are sick of that guy. So, just go ahead and trade him so you get rid of
there
him.
There you go.
But I do think the Titans should be looking at the trade market. And another name that comes to mind for me is Case Keenum. Because obviously Keenum's going to want out in Denver now that they've gotten Joe Flacco. And I think Keenum's got one more year left on his deal. What's wrong with bringing Keenum in to back up Mariota? That's another thing I think that they should be looking at. If there's another situation that's similar to the Khalil Mack one this year where there's a really good player who one team just will not pay, I think you need to look to be in the mix on that. I just think the Titans need to be in the mix in the trade market. The problem is they have six picks, and I don't want to be trading away a bunch of picks because I want to be picking players with my picks.
And that's there you run into your problem. You gripe about not having enough picks, and then you gripe about not being part of the trade market. Can't have them both now. Which one do you want to do? You can do one or the other. Which one do you want? So that's where it gets hard. You run into the same problem. And in my world, trades have never been great. Trades have never...
I mean, not your trades, but...
I don't see trades in general. I don't see trades generally living up to what they're supposed to be, you know, across the league. You go out and you trade for whoever, you know, whichever team it is, it doesn't matter. And you think this guy's going to come in and completely, it's kind of like we're talking about with the Preds. You know, if you go out and trade one of these guys, you think, you know, all of a sudden you're going to win the Stanley Cup because of that? What'd you say, 2 out of 29?
Yes.
Okay.
And it wasn't like those two guys were superstar kind of guys that led their team.
It generally doesn't work. I think the most successful trades I've ever had were those modest trades where you went out and you got a
Dennis Kelly,
Chris Hope. You go out and get a Dennis Kelly. Mm-hmm. You go out and get a, you know, whoever, you know, whoever a veteran guy might be that is not necessarily a superstar, but is really a good player and a great teammate and a good leader. And those guys have the most impact on your team. I mean, to my way of thinking, they come in and they really, really help you because nobody expects anything from them. You know, you bring in Randall Godfrey. Nobody expects him to do much. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, pretty good player. And then all of a sudden the other players like him. And then all of a sudden, you know, you say, okay, that worked out. Kevin Y, you know, people like that. Now, those aren't necessarily trades, but, I mean, you bring in those kind of modest guys that come in and really, really give you something for what you have to pay. Whatever it costs you, you get back twice whatever, you know, you put into them, what investment you put in.
So, like, what I want to see the Titans do is I want to see the Titans go out and get people that can come in here like Danny Shelton went to the Patriots and Jason McCourty. Those guys we thought were losers. Now, McCourty, you know, he still is what he is. He has not changed. But we thought like Danny Shelton was a total bust, and here comes Belichick trading in for him, and Danny Shelton may be the unsung hero of the Super Bowl. And I wonder, like, where are the Titans on those guys? Everybody's going to want, like, ESPN has DeMarcus Lawrence ranked as the top free agent, the pass rusher from the Cowboys.
Right.
Well, I'd like DeMarcus Lawrence on the Titans, too. We all would like DeMarcus Lawrence on the Titans. The Titans aren't going to get DeMarcus Lawrence. But who's the guy out there that, you know, was maybe a first-round pick and it didn't work out in Phoenix or Arizona. It didn't work out in Arizona, or it didn't work out in San Francisco, or it didn't work out there, and you sign them or trade a seventh for them, and all of a sudden it's Eric Ebron into the Pro Bowl. Who are those guys? And that's kind of what I'd like to see the Titans go get, and then I'd like to see them draft some difference makers this year when I've got everybody like Trevor Maddich telling me that offensive and defensive lines are kind of the strength of this draft. I'd like to see them kind of fortify those, and I'd like to see them go get those under-the-radar Eric Ebron-type pickups that can help the ball club.
Well, there are those guys out there. The secret to those guys, the secret to Rob Ninkovich, the secret to Mike Vrabel, the secret to those guys, once again, is you know exactly what they are. You know exactly where they're going to fit. And you bring them right in, you plug them in, and they're good, and they're good there for a number of years. I don't care what happened in the past. I don't care what he did for you. I don't care what position he played for in St. Louis. I don't care about any of that. You know, all I know is this is his skill set. He can come in. Neither one of those guys came in as a legitimate outside pass rusher. And they both ended up Super Bowls and All Pros and Pro Bowls and getting sacks and being really, really valuable players. So those guys are ideal. And you know, I don't even know, did they trade for Vrabel or did they get him off a waiver?
Vrabel,
wire?
I think they just got him.
Okay. Well, and the same thing with Rob. I think we just got Rob off the waiver wire. So, you know, he's out there, and a lot of people, he was the long snapper. So people are saying, you need a long snapper? No. Well, then, you know, you're not interested in Ninkovich. And we talked about it. He, when he was in college, was a good pass rusher. Not a great pass rusher, but a good pass rusher. And we said, hey, let's bring him in and let's see if he can rush. And sure enough, he's one of those guys that isn't fast enough. He isn't big enough. He isn't strong enough. he just plays with great effort. He's a great technician. He does all those kinds of things, and he's going to wear you out at a point in time and get a sack out of you some way, somehow.
So how does John Robinson find those guys? Because other than Dennis Kelly and Jayon Brown, I'm not sure. And maybe Byard, because that was the third round. I'm not sure he's really finding those kind of guys yet. And I think yet's the right word, because he's had so much else to do before getting to this. I mean, we talk about how can they find the Rob Ninkovich of the Titans, and yet if Mariota can't play, then who cares?
Well, yeah, and the truth is, I mean, when we brought in Rob Ninkovich, we brought him in as a third guy, fourth guy. We're not asking you to start. You know, just come in and give us what you can get. All of a sudden, you're watching him and you're around him, and then pretty soon he's in the Pro Bowl. Well, that's what you need, but it's not like you necessarily do that on purpose. And when you bring him in, you have guys lining up ahead of him. It's not that you're bringing him in to fill a spot. And I think here, like when let's talk about, you know, pass rush guy, you're bringing him in to fill a spot, which means it's really hard to take a chance on somebody's fourth to come in and be your first, you know. Or why are you going to bring him in? Well, he was a long snapper. And that has to do what with pass rushing? And all of a sudden you get him, you go, hey, you know, I mean, it was a deal. So I think it's easier when you have all those positions filled up and the guys you bringing in, you can test a little bit. And they're not necessarily, you're not bringing in a guy to start. Because if you're bringing in a guy to start,
it's got
to
be Jadeveon Clowney.
You got to think it's got to be somebody you've got to pay money for, or it's got to be somebody that's an upper echelon draft choice.
Okay, so that's how we're starting. And again, how active do the Titans need to be? Maybe the trade market, free agency. And again, I'll throw this out there, Keenum. What do you think about Keenum? Would you bring Keenum in to back up Mariota? So that's there too as well. So we're starting on the Titans. 615-737-1025. We will get to the Preds because we got a lot of Preds to get to today. But coming up next, Trevor Maddich says he can see the Titans. You know, he sees some things he can see the Titans doing the draft. And if Floyd was GM, what's the one thing that he would be sure to fix this offseason with the Titans? We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM live from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5, the game.
The league is kind of caught up with the notion that you need elite talent in there, and taking a guard, if he's worth the pick at number six, is okay. That still can be an impact player for you. Why? Because you're countering the Aaron Donalds, the J.J. Watts when they move inside to pass rush. That's why, and I think that the Titans right now, you know, they need that position. On the defensive side, they're one outstanding edge rusher away to go with Harold Landry to be a terrific pass rushing team. And I think from a receiver standpoint, they're one fast guy away from having that hole underneath open up for Davis and all the rest of those receivers. So right now, they're at the key position groups, they're just one or two guys away from making a quantum leap because of the way that guy will make everybody else better.
Trevor Maddich on our show this week. We're talking about the draft, et cetera, and the Titans. So he thinks, you know, hey, one guy here, one guy there, one guy here, one guy. There's a lot of different positions Trevor brought up there, things that he feels like the Titans are going to need. And I'm not sure you can get all that in one draft or one free agency or something like that. So, Floyd, you put your GM shoes back on.
Okay.
What is the one thing about the Tennessee Titans that you would make sure you fix either via draft or free agency
pass
this
rush.
Offseason?
Pass rush, pass rush, pass rush.
Okay, and how would you fix it?
I'd bring in pass rushers.
Okay, so here are your options. DeMarcus Lawrence of the Dallas Cowboys is the top free agent according to ESPN.com. They have DeMarcus Lawrence of Dallas as the top free agent. He's number one. My guess is DeMarcus Lawrence doesn't get out of Dallas.
Do they? They'll franchise him, won't they?
Didn't they franchise him last year?
I don't know.
I think they did franchise him last year, and I think he was not happy about that. I think there's been a long, you know, kind of cold war going on between Lawrence and the Cowboys. But ultimately, Jerry likes to keep these kind of guys, so I think Lawrence stays there. So let's forget about him. Number three free agent, according to ESPN, Dee Ford of the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Ford can't line up onside in the most critical moments, but he is a good pass rusher.
I don't think he'll get out either. I mean, I think he'll be franchised.
Jadeveon Clowney of the Texans at number four.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Only if I could get him at my price, and you can't.
No, he's going to want like $95 million. Yeah. Oh, guaranteed, you know, for the first 3 years, and then the last couple of years can probably be these, you know, fugazi, you know, kind of years or whatever. But the first couple of years, you are going to bite at the pants with whatever you pay for.
And I think you'd have to be careful. Now, this is just, I don't know the kid at all, but just watching him play, you know, I think if he was at New England and he could win a Super Bowl, I think he probably plays at a certain caliber. If he's at Cincinnati, I'm not sure the caliber of the play.
Although he's been with the Texans and they've been pretty good, and he's been kind of both
think
of those.
They, but I think also he's had JJ there, and he's had, you know, Merciless, and he's had some guy. If he goes someplace and he's expected to be the lead dog, I think maybe that changes.
Number five free agent, according to ESPN, Frank Clark, defensive end of the Seattle Seahawks.
I think they're going to franchise him too.
I mean, I feel like everybody who's a top free agent is probably going to get franchised.
Especially the pass rusher.
Trey Flowers from the Patriots. Now, he won't get franchised.
No, he won't get franchised. I mean, he's not, again, I mean, if you could get him at your price, I mean, he's not going to come in and set the league on fire.
He's going to be another $95 million guy.
No, you can't pay him $95 million.
I'm telling you, these pass rushers, man, they are not going to come for free this year.
Oh, they're good. They're expensive every year, no doubt.
Number 17, according to ESPN, Ezekiel Ansah. ESPN writes, age and long injury history will limit the value. Most recently, two shoulder injuries cost him 9 games in 2018, but he had 48 sacks in 6 seasons with the Lions, and a team with a plan to use him situationally could receive big dividends. So that's Ezekiel Ansah, 30 years old from Detroit, who obviously knows how to play in the Patriot kind of defensive system because he played for Matt Patricia in Detroit. Could you bring in Ziggy Ansah?
You know, I think that's probably the report is probably right. I mean, you're bringing him in, just what we were talking about before. You're bringing him to be a third, to be the extra guy. You're not bringing him in to be a starter.
I doubt you're going to be paying him extra guy money, though.
Yeah, well, and same thing. If he wants, you know, if he wants $95 million, then he's got to go someplace else, too.
Okay, number 24, Za'Darius Smith. Again, these are ESPN.com Plus or whatever it is. It's their rankings of the free agents. 24 is Za'Darius Smith. We have not found one pass rusher that Floyd likes for the Titans who he thinks the Titans will have a shot at. My guess is Dee Ford would probably be your number one choice of all the guys we've mentioned. If you could, like, if you were going to have to pay the big money for one of these guys, I feel like Dee Ford would be the guy that you would pay the money for.
Probably. He's okay. Young and he's healthy.
Za'Darius Smith, Baltimore. Now, remember, he played for Dean Pease in Baltimore. Number 24, he's 26. 24 on ESPN's list. A part-time starter for the Ravens, Smith played 66% of the snaps on defense and made an impact as a pass rusher. He had a career-high 8.5 sacks, and Pro Football Focus credited him with 60 pressures, which ranked number 17 in the NFL.
You know, you would have to rely on Dean on this one a lot. And Dean would tell you a lot. Either Dean's going to tell you know, I mean, 8.5 may be the best he's ever going to have. By the same token, 8.5 maybe just a start.
And that's if he's playing 66% of the snaps. And if Dean knows how to use them in 100% of the snaps, and all of a sudden he's 13.5.
Or 15 sacks or something, you know, then all of a sudden he's a factor. But, you know, I mean, athletically, all that kind of stuff, I mean, I think he's probably a go. But it's really going to depend on what Dean would tell you about him, how Dean would treat him.
What if Dean says, yes, I'm in?
Then
you're
in.
So that's the first guy Floyd thinks that he'd bring in that he'd have a shot at is Za'Darius Smith, number 26 on the list. And again, I'm skipping over the non-defensive end pass rushing positions. Dante Fowler Jr. of the L.A. Rams.
Nah.
You don't even want to bring him in, see if he's a good kid?
No.
No love for Dante Fowler Jr.
I don't need to bring him in to know he's a good kid. I mean, all you have to do is look at his history. I think that probably speaks louder.
Okay, so no on Dante Fowler Jr. I don't even know who Harry Anderson is, so I'm going to skip him. Harry Anderson of the Jets. Do you know who that is? I have no idea
Is. You're getting down guys now. That
Ndamukong Suh is number 40. You made a run at him last year. Would you make another run at Ndamukong Suh?
You know, you know what you're going to use him for. I mean, he's not going to be your pass rusher. He's coming in to do a little bit more of what you're getting out of the big guys inside anyway.
Brandon Graham is number 41 defensive end of the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe Brandon Graham is the guy who sacked Tom Brady in the Super Bowl to get him to fumble at Philadelphia. It says about Graham, he's 31. His sack total fell to 4.5 this season after recording 8 last year. Graham remains an effective pass rusher and durable every down player. He was on the field for 72% of the Eagles' defensive snaps, and that's a good number to have on your free agent resume. He is ESPN's 41st ranked free agent. Would you take a run at Brandon Graham?
You know, if you could get him in the role you want, and what you would want is you want an older, legitimate, you want, who would have been, it would have been maybe Kevin Carter, maybe not from a skill set standpoint, but just from a person standpoint, you know, to make them understand what it is to rush passer, to make them understand, you know, what it is to set up moves, to help them do those kinds of things. I mean, he's getting up there a little bit, but he's an undersized guy that has had some production rushing the quarterback, but he's never going to be a 15 sack guy. You know, he's going to be a 8-10 sack guy. But if you can bring a guy in like that and let some of these younger guys emulate him, then he may help you from that standpoint. I always liked, if I had a young group, I always liked bringing in a guy like that has some Pro Bowl credentials, that has a little clout, that everybody knows who he is, that has a Super Bowl ring, that has, you know, those kinds of things, because if he's the right kind of guy, he can come in and really give you direction with that group.
So, basically, we just went through the top 50 free agents. Of the pass rushers out there, the only ones that you're really considering at all would be Brandon Graham, Za'Darius Smith, and Dante Fowler Jr.
The problem is, it's just like we were saying. I mean, you need to think about this when you talk about the receivers. If you're a legitimate pass rusher in the NFL and the team isn't dumb and you're a good guy, you're not getting on the market now.
You let Javon Kirst get on the market. You let Kevin Carter get on the market.
Well, Javon got on the market only because of an injury.
I'm just saying, Javon was legit, and Javon got on the
market. Javon was not legit. That's part of the problem.
Javon was in the Super Bowl the next year.
Well, that doesn't mean he was legit.
So, Javon, you know, you let Javon out in the market. Maybe that tells you something about you. But so then you would have to, if you are dead set on fixing the pass rush, as you said, then it would have to be in the draft, right?
Well, I mean, you don't. All those guys that we think are going to get franchised, maybe they don't. I mean, maybe Frank Clark doesn't get franchised. I think I'd be surprised if he doesn't, but that possibility's there.
But then are you going to give Frank Clark in Seattle, are you going to give him the $95 million?
Oh, I don't know about that. But
What if D. Lawrence and the Cowboys can't come to an agreement? D. Lawrence hits the market. Would you give DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, $110 million to come in here for the Titans?
I don't know that I'd give anybody $110 million.
Isn't that the going rate for a high-end pass rusher?
I don't know what the last contract – who got the last contract?
I'm going to look at the last year's deals in this, but I would assume that, I mean, I think pass rusher money is, you know, 110 is probably too much. I mean, if Taylor Lewan's getting 50, then 110 ridiculous. But would you give the Frank Clark the $70 million if that's what it is? I mean, who are you willing to fork over the big time money to, I guess is kind of my question.
Well, I mean, big time money and $110 million are two different things. If the money, if you're talking about pass rush money being, you know, 50, 60, 70 million, then yeah, if you're going to get the top guy, you're forced to pay that. But I mean, you don't pay $100 million unless he's, on his way to the Hall of Fame and going to be out there, and that's just not going to happen.
I mean, I'm looking at some of these deals. In last year's, there was not, I don't think there was an elite pass rusher that hit the market last year. Because the top defensive lineman that hit the market was Vinny Curry, and he just got – or, well, it was Ndamukong Suh. We know that Ndamukong Suh got the 1 year $14 million from the Rams. So that's really not that much money when you consider, you know, some of the other things. And I'm just looking through it, and I think, like, the biggest – other than the Cousins deal, the biggest thing that pops out to me is Andrew Norwell at 5 years, $66.5 million.
Yeah. I mean, those $60, $70 million for a legitimate pass rusher is probably, and again, I'm guessing, I don't have any info, but that's probably about market. And so, you know going in that, hey, if Frank Clark is available and I like Frank Clark, I know it's going to cost me $65, $70 million bucks. I mean, that's the deal, and that's part of free agency. You have no choice. It's not like you say, well, I'm not going to pay him that much. Fine, then you're not going to.
Would you give Clowney $60 million? Would you give Clowney $50
million? Maybe. Depends on how you could structure it.
So if you can get Clowney in here, then that probably solves a lot of problems.
Well, yeah, but he's not going to come for – I mean, he's going to want to be top dog. He's going to want his 70 or 75 or whatever the number is.
Well, you just give it a chance. I mean, that's how, just give it a chance. Let's take your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Preds tonight against Montreal. Coming up next, Peter Laviolette. Kind of discuss the inconsistency with the club. And it's a long clip, but I do want to play it because I think it tells you how much Peter has been thinking about this. We'll get to that coming up next. It's Jared and Floyd live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It seems like every team goes through those slumps and you know, they get hot and then they have a little bit of bump on the road and don't play as well. And that's how it feels like. And I think it's also a dangerous thing because you don't want to feel comfortable where we at right the moment.
Right.
And, you know, we still have 3-4 games in hand compared to a lot of the other Western teams. So right now, as of now, we're still in a really good shape and a really good position. But, we need to win some games.
I think Pekka last night on Smashville Live, I think he feels the exact same way that we probably feel about this team. I mean, they're in the playoffs. You know, they're fine. Now, the standings are a little misleading because, you know, the other teams have so many more games to play than the Predators do.
Preds have played more games than anybody in the league, I think.
It seems that way. Everybody else has played 59. Less games.
I mean, I'm looking at all these other people, and I think the Preds have played 59, and they've played, 53, 54. I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, how does he get that far out of whack?
Especially considering the Preds have already had their bye week.
Yeah.
I mean, but.
Anyway.
But to Pekka's point, I mean, you know, they're fine. But as Pekka said right there at the end, hey, we're going to win some games. And I don't think anybody disagrees with that notion right there from Pekka. Tonight they play Montreal. And I feel like they need a good performance tonight just to get the mojo back. But I felt that before the Detroit game, too. So today, I'm a man of the people, right, Floyd? I don't think anybody would disagree that I am a man of the people. And when I say the people, I'm talking about you, the fans. So when I know how you're feeling and I take the phone calls, this morning I felt it my duty to go ask the coach, you know, kind of the questions you feel about this team, you, the fans. So I asked him about the inconsistencies of one game playing good, one game playing bad, one game playing so-so. What do you? And Peter had a very, very long answer that I think is very insightful. So this was earlier today.
Coach, this team right now feels like win a big game, lose a close game, lose a tough game that you're not happy about. It just kind of feels like it's different each and every time, and the team's struggling to find consistency. At this point in the year, how do you kind of go about fixing that or kind of getting everybody in the same direction?
We're always trying to fix things. And you're right, there's never it doesn't seem to take on the same identity. Whether you play well, you play lousy and you win, you play pretty good and you lose, or you play horribly. But there's always things that we're trying to fix. I think there's always things that we can get better at. And that's just not trying to give you coach speak. It's actuality. We're in there. There's face-off plays that we're missing. If we're working on the power play, whether in meetings or on the ice, or we're working on defensive zone coverage or the starts or whatever it might be, trying to bury a team in the third period. There's always topics that come up, and it never seems that it's something that consistently is the same from game to game. There's a couple areas, I think, from game to game where we're looking to be better, but it changes all the time. There's a couple games ago in St. Louis, I just don't think that we played very well. You know, we didn't do the right things in order to win a hockey game. I thought we came back the next night against St. Louis, played a pretty good hockey game and threw a lot of attempts at the net and lots of chances, and we were chasing that game the entire night and couldn't get it done. So they're two different games, so I can't give you the same answer for both games, but we're constantly working to find that consistency and that identity as we push down the stretch here.
Now, that's a lot of stuff from the coach.
Covered it all.
What was kind of your reaction to hearing that? Because he starts off in there talking about, no, you're right, we as a team, we're not all that consistent, but every game is different. It's never the same issue from game to game. And then kind of highlighted the games in which I didn't like the effort in this game, and then I liked the effort in that game, and we didn't win. And then So what did you take out of all that from Peter?
I mean, he covered everything. So I don't know that I took – I mean, I don't disagree with anything that he said.
But is it not concerning that it almost feels like he's saying, hey, one game it's this, one game it's that, one game, and even though I have my ideas on certain things we're trying to fix every day, it's almost felt like he's like, I really can't put my finger on exactly what the problem is. And that is a concern, and I think that goes back to kind of David's point and the thing that we said yesterday, which was, I think David sits up there and watches this team and thinks, what am I missing here? Like, what am I not seeing? Because I'm the all-time winningest general manager in the history of the sport. I think I've built a really good team. One day they do the right thing and we lose. One day they do the wrong thing and we win. I mean, I've signed these guys and traded for these guys that have track records of success, and some guys aren't playing well and some guys are playing out of their rear ends. And I don't – that kind of feels the way that what Peter just said all right there.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I took from between he and Pekka, I thought Pekka had the most astute, wise statement of all of those, which was, we're losing, we're not playing good, we know it, we got to win, but you can't get comfortable in this. You can't get comfortable in the fact that, you know, we're not winning, but we're still going to be okay, and we know we're going to be okay. You cannot carry that comfort with you into the playoffs because you will have no chance. And again, I don't. That's just a gut feeling for me. But I thought that was a wise statement.
Well, and to your point about that, and maybe what Pekka was hitting at too is, you can't get comfortable with the way that we sit at it right now, where we're like, well, I mean, they'll make the playoffs, so it's okay. Like, if you're Pekka, you can't get comfortable with that. Now I can, because I'm not playing, but Pekka is. Yeah, if Pekka, you know, goes out there, and if Pekka goes to garbage, you may not make the playoffs. You know, just a month ago, we laughed at St. Louis, and we laughed at Chicago, and we laughed at all these teams, and Colorado was nipping your heel. A month ago, Colorado was probably your first-round matchup. Now Colorado might be the worst team in the division.
They're gone, and the other two are nipping at your heel.
I mean, Dallas and St. Louis, and so – who's to say that if you don't figure it out, if you don't turn it around, that St. Louis and Dallas doesn't get, especially considering that they have more games to play than you've played or than you have to play.
Right.
You know, that is probably something Pekka's talking about too, is, you know, you can't get comfortable of, oh, well, we'll make the playoffs. We're good. I mean, I ain't gonna worry about that. We're fine. And then that kind of opens my eyes to another thing about, man, do they need to turn this ship around or – you know, maybe at some point down the road, risk missing the playoffs this year.
Oh, I don't. I mean, I feel confident they're going to make the playoffs. I worry about, if anything, I worry about the momentum going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your attitude going into it? I think that concerns me as much as anything else. Because if you're kind of talking, I mean, one of the things. You know, one of the things that Pekka indirectly brought up there, mm-hmm. was, you know, like I said before, hey, guys, we all understand where we are, but if we get comfortable with this, this is where we're going to be. And I think that was kind of a, it wasn't a warning, but, you know, it was one of those, hey, pay attention to what I'm saying here, you know. Don't get comfortable. this is not acceptable. And so that's the part that I really liked. And I think if they understand that, which, God, they, you know, I mean, these guys have been together for so long and understand each other. And, I mean, that should be something that's automatically communicated through the locker room. Mm-hmm. I mean, that should be a simple item.
So let's take your phones on it, 615-737-1025. Again, you heard Pekka right there talk about the ups and downs and the not getting comfortable, and he knows they got to win games. And Peter Laviolette talking about, hey, it can be a different issue every game that's costing them a game, and what are they going to do about it? 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get your thoughts in on that. And then Peter, you know, he was not too down on them after the Detroit game. So I asked him about the Detroit game today. And there was one thing from the Detroit game that he didn't like. And when he pointed out he didn't like it, it became something that I very much did not like. We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
The thing that I didn't like tonight about this whole thing was when Athanasiou, when he scored that goal, bad. Pekka felt bad. That's when the team should have rallied.
Yes.
That's when the guys in that bench should have said, hey, Pekka feels bad. We know the goals. Let's go back and get it for him. Let's get down ice, and let's take this bull by the horns. I got down here 5 impossible saves Pekkarinen made for his team after that goal, and we had 3 shots on net only with about 3.5 minutes left in that period. That angers me.
The president of the Pekkarinen Fan Club, Terry Crisp, right there. I think that's his new title, the president of the Pekkarinen Fan Club. If he was putting together a presidency, Crispy was, it'd be Pekka for president, Craig Smith as the vice president, because those are his guys.
Oh, he loves Pekka now. Loves Pekka.
And he loves Craig Smith.
Yeah.
Less than he loves Pekka, but, I mean, we all love Craig Smith less than we love Pekka. But, so, Tuesday night's game against Detroit, and, again, we spent, like, the whole show on it yesterday, so I'm not trying to go back and just harp on it and beat it down, because today is against Montreal and it's a different game. And then the last time, and Peter brought this up earlier today, when they went to Detroit and lost, they came out the next night and beat the crap out of Montreal as kind of a, you know, okay, turn it up kind of moment. And I think Peter's hoping for that again today. But I asked Peter today about the Detroit game because Peter didn't seem as mad as I was about the Detroit game and as mad as the fans were about the Detroit game. And when we were here last time on Tuesday, I think if I had told you, yeah, hey, not only are the Preds not going to crush this Detroit team, but they're going to lose, I think you would have been stunned. And so I was stunned that Peter wasn't all that upset about the Detroit game. So I asked him about the Detroit game, and was it like, hey, was it just you felt like, yeah, played well, you just didn't score? I mean, what was it? So I asked Peter about that today, and his answer kind of bothered me a little bit.
Going back to the energy the other night against Detroit, you liked the energy when you watched the video.
Yeah.
Did it just feel like you guys weren't getting goals to go down?
So as I addressed the players with your question, what I liked was our start. I thought the start could have been a completely different score than walking in down 1-0, and it wasn't. And so we deal with that. We fought back the second period and scored 2 goals when we were down 2-0 to get it to a tie score. If I'm going to critique the last game like I did with the players, I wish the third period, which has been a strong period for us, I wish the third period we had that pedal down and really tried to make sure that those points got secured and came our way. So of the 3 periods, I thought the third period was the weakest, and that was the period where we needed to be our best.
Is that not concerning that when he goes back and watches the tape, he looks at the third period when you're in a losing streak against a bum team and thinks, yeah, you know, they just wasn't there like I'm used to seeing? Is that not a red flag?
Well, I think what he's saying is that he feels like the third period has been strong for them across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And truth is, he's probably right. I mean, third period, they've, you know, come from way behind to tie it up and maybe not win, but, you know, certainly catch up with a bunch of people.
I sat up there Saturday at that St. Louis game when they made it 3-2, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, if they come into St. Louis and play the way they played and walk out of here with a win, I'm gonna wet my pants. I'll be so ecstatic.
Yeah, and I think he's just he was pointing out that if he would have gotten his normal third period, they might have pulled that thing out. But I think he was right about the first period, too. I mean, I think we all walked away from that first period, and we kind of were going, "What? How can we be behind? How is that possible? We were playing too good." But that's the way it was.
Well, he said he liked to start, and I agree with that. And sometimes in these games, I mean, like, remember they played at Vegas right before the All-Star break, and Soros basically won the whole game for them. And in that game, the first period, they were just murdered by Vegas. Just murdered. No score going to the break. Like, that's going to happen just like the other night's going to happen, where you go out there and you just push it to Detroit, and then you go to the break down 1-0. Like, that's just the reality of how hockey's going to be. So he says he likes to start. Proud of the way they fought back to make it 2-2. And, I mean, when you make it 2-2 on a power play goal by P.K. Subban, considering how the power play has been playing and considering how P.K. Subban's been playing, I feel like that's a major plus. But then the lack of the whatever it was, whether it was effort or focus or determination to make sure they got those 2 points on Tuesday, and they combine that with Pekka's kind of warning of don't get comfortable, that's where it's kind of a red flag to me. Like, well, okay, hey, now, hey, I know that, you know, last year you played your butts off in the regular season as hard as you could and you didn't win the cup. I get that. But, like, let's not sit here and just think that these February games don't matter, because they do. And the second you start to think that they don't matter is the second that all of a sudden St. Louis and Dallas are nipping at your rear end.
Yeah, I mean, I worry about the fact, you know, that we can look at these last three or four games and pull out a period where we were really good, and not a game where we were really good.
I can't remember last time I felt good about a Preds game.
We always come in the next day, and it's, man, that third period, boy, oh boy, did we play our. What about 1 and 2?
Well, that's why it's a Sunday game.
We say the first period we lit it up, but we were behind. Well, what about 3, 2, and 3?
That's why the Sunday game never sat well with me. Like, I went to the game Saturday, and I watched the first period and third period on TV Sunday, and I listened to the second period on the radio. And the Saturday game didn't sit well with anybody. But the Sunday game didn't sit well with me because of that second period in which you're like, what the heck is going on here? And then the little things, and then, but they played so great in the third period to come back and tie the game. And then right, but they just totally blew it in the second period. And it's just like that way in the playoffs. They went to Winnipeg and outplayed the Jets, beat the Jets up in game 3. But they gave up 4 goals in a row after getting a 3-0 lead. They lost the game. They lost the series. Like, right. It doesn't matter. I mean, one bad period can sink your ship for the entire game. And to that point, one good period doesn't necessarily mean that you had a good night. And I'm with you. I'm kind of tired of the second period of the game Tuesday was a really, really good period. I don't care. Like, I want a game. They don't win periods. You win games.
And I think that's been one of the inconsistencies. And I'm sure Peter's talked about it. I'm sure the players have talked about it. You know, we got to put together a game. And it's not, I mean, we understand, you know, when it is in the season and you're not to the playoff, all that stuff. We understand all that. Or at least, I think we do. The thing that to me is important right now, I mean, to be honest with you, the score of the games, I'm not sure is as important in preparation for the playoffs as it is how you're playing. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go out there like your hair's on fire, but you have to go out there with a certain amount of focus and a certain amount of workmanship and, a certain degree of emphasis you're going to put into this thing. You can't just, you know, I'm going to do it now. Oh, I didn't have a good series. I'll wait till the next series. Oh, no. Well, I'll get it on this next one. I don't like that kind of talk.
Let's go 615-737-1025. I do, by the way, I do feel good about tonight's game for one reason.
Okay.
Well, I was there, and it's Valentine's Day. And today, everybody got mad at me because when Coach was done talking, I said, hey, happy Valentine's Day, Coach. And Coach said, you too, and walked away. And everybody looked at me like, why are you wishing the coach a happy Valentine's Day, Jared? I'm like, I don't know, because it's Valentine's Day. You wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day, right?
Yeah.
Well, because I did that. I guess everybody else in the media is too worried or afraid to wish the coach a happy Valentine's Day. I wish him happy Valentine's Day, which makes me think that that's going to motivate them to play better today.
Jeez.
I'm convinced of it.
Oh.
I am convinced.
You are a sick puppy.
Because today, this show, I've decided this show is going to be about spreading positivity.
You are so far from that. But.
Hey, this is going to be a positive show.
Okay.
Coming up next, the Preds have lost three in a row.
There you go.
Coming up next, the Preds have lost three in a row. What Peter, the one thing Peter did address, the way they're playing, and he did it without sugarcoating it. And I wonder what that means. We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM live at Bridgestone Arena. Preds and Canadians tonight. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.